Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of From My Point of View. And I am so happy this episode. I'm so happy because my prayers have been answered. The Yankees listened to me. They brought up Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells. And guess what happened? They swept the Astros in a three-game series for the first time since 2013. And all the kids hit. Pereira hit. He had RBIs this weekend. Peraza hit. He had RBIs this weekend. They both been kind of struggling, and they were hitting. Austin Wells hit. Dominguez homered twice, his first swing in the big leagues, an opposite field home run in Houston. Volpe was playing well. Torres was playing well. All the guys that are the future of this Yankees team were hitting, and I am just so happy, and it's such a relief, and this team is finally. It's fun for like maybe the first time all year. This team is fun to watch. I'm so happy, and I'm elated that it's working out. And we're gonna go over the weekend and people who's performed, and you know what the future is gonna look like now for the New York Yankees. Now that they pulled the trigger on bringing these kids up and starting them every day. They started every day, even. Started over Glaber one day. Glaber got a day of rest. And, you know, Oswaldo Cabrera was at third. Peraza was at second. Volpe at short. Pereira in left. Wells behind the plate and Dominguez in center. So even with I hope we re-signed Glaber Torres. Honestly, he's been playing great and he's still only 26 years old. Like, he fits right in with this core and can really be like a veteran presence on this core. Along with Aaron Judge, everyone else, you know, kind of up in the air, to be completely honest with you. The only other spot you're missing is first base with Rizzo, and LeMahieu's kind of been filling that role since he's been out. But when Rizzo comes back, now you have LeMahieu and probably Oswaldo Cabrera platooning on the bench as utility guys. But we'll get into all of that. I'm very, very, very happy with how the Yankees played this weekend. And it's so refreshing now to have this young team to root for, to be able to like look forward to the future. It reminds me a lot of, you know, the end of 2015 when Judge and Tyler Austin got brought up. Tyler Austin obviously didn't pan out, but Aaron Judge, his first career at bat, home run the other way in Yankee Stadium. Like, this is the kind of feeling I have, or I had, watching him, and now being excited to be like, wow. Back then it was like, wow, we have, you know, Gary Sanchez, Aaron Judge, Greg Bird, like these young guys that are going to be the future of this team. And it really only ended up being Aaron Judge in the end, in the long haul. But now you have this new crop of young guys who are in, and they just played so well this weekend. And I'm so happy. Week one of college football in the books. Coach Prime, the man of the week, the Colorado Boulder Buffaloes, going into Texas, playing 17th-ranked TCU, the runner-up in the national title game last year, and winning outright as 20.5-point underdogs. They might have even been 21-point underdogs. But huge, huge dogs marching into Texas, playing TCU, and winning outright. Travis Hunter is overreaction, maybe the best player in the country. I honestly don't know if that's an overreaction. The kid played over 100 snaps at wide receiver and defensive back. He had an interception in the red zone, inside the five, I think it was. He had tackles for loss. He had double-digit catches for over 100 yards. Just like the most insane, in the Texas heat, in summer, the most insane thing I think I've ever seen with my own two eyes. Like, I wasn't around when Charles Woodson was in Michigan. So, and obviously not only Travis Hunter impressed, but Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sun, these guys coming from Jackson State. Sanders had 510 yards and 4 touchdowns against TCU. He said post game, I think that's the most yards I ever thrown for in my life. And I just came from an HBCU. So these guys are really wearing that on their shoulders. People were questioning, like, Deion coming in. Basically, everyone on the Colorado football team transferred. And that team won just one game last year. One guy I know stayed, Trevor Woods. He had an interception in the end zone for Colorado. He stayed around, and he's a baller. Everyone likes him now. Shedeur Sanders popped off. three or four different guys with over 100 yards in the game receiving. Dylan Edwards, five catches, 135 yards and three touchdowns. You know what? Let's save it. We're literally about to get into it. And then on top of that, of course, Thursday night football is finally here. The first game of the NFL season. Best bets and my predictions. So before we get started, a reminder that if you download the Underdog Fantasy app using promo code Animal House, you will get 100% match bonus up to $100. So download the Underdog app today using promo code Animal House for 100% match deposit bonus up to $100. We're going to start with college football. Then we'll get to the Yankees and we'll wrap up the show with Thursday night football, because honestly, that's all I want to talk about. Deion Sanders and the Buffaloes of Colorado. They were a huge, huge talking point. Everyone in the Pac-12, it's funny that the Pac-12 is basically disintegrating after this year, because everyone in the Pac-12 won in week one, which was pretty funny. But everyone was looking at them. Coach Prime, you know, coming from Jackson State with essentially his entire team and just supplanting whoever was at the University of Colorado the year prior. Shedeur Sanders, his son, starting quarterback. Travis Hunter, former number one overall prospect in high school, coming over. And a bunch of other dogs that a lot of people haven't heard of. To be quite honest, the only people that I had heard of at Jackson State with Deion were his son, Shedeur, the quarterback, and Travis Hunter, because I know Travis Hunter was the number one overall prospect in a lot of people's boards coming out of high school, and Deion was able to recruit him to an HBCU. But everyone was just spectacular. Shedeur Sanders, as I said, over 500 yards, 510 yards and four touchdowns for Shedeur Sanders. Four guys over 100 yards in receiving. Dylan Edwards, five catches, 135 yards and three touchdowns. Travis Hunter, when he wasn't locking down the TCU wide receivers, 11 catches for 119 yards. Xavier Weaver, six catches for 118 yards. And Jimmy Horn Jr., 11 catches for 117 yards and a touchdown. Just unbelievable stuff from this Buffalo, Colorado Buffalo team. This is like they automatically have propelled themselves to probably the most interesting teams in the country. If not, they already kind of were. But I think their over-under win total was like 5.5. You know, this was a team that won one whole game a year ago, and now they are completely rebooted. Different head coach and essentially a different roster top to bottom on both sides of the ball. So a lot of people transferred in and out of Colorado, and they went into Texas in the Labor Day weekend heat of Texas. Travis Hunter played over 100 snaps, unheard of. And, you know, Deion went on Undisputed, the new and revamped Undisputed. I think he was talking to just Skip and Michael Irvin, and said, Travis Hunter has been playing cornerback and wide receiver his entire life. Who am I to take that away from him? I'm just going to let him go out there and let him cook. Like, just let him play ball. This is what he's been doing his entire life. I'm not going to be the one to say, no, you got to choose. And Deion obviously was very much, that's like personal experience from Deion, because he was an elite, you know, at Florida State. He was elite at track and field, running track. He played baseball, played in the major leagues. He obviously was a sensational football player. He's a Hall of Fame football player, six-time All-Pro, the best defensive back of all time, one of the greatest, if not the greatest athlete of all time, playing at the professional baseball level in the World Series. Like, this is a dude who literally did it all and wanted to do it all and made sure that others allowed him to do it all, because who is going to tell Deion Sanders no? And he takes that mindset and he sees someone like Travis Hunter, like, who better to learn from? You're already this kid with sensational gifts and athletic ability, and who better to learn from than probably the best two-way athlete of all time? And Deion Sanders, like, he could run wide receiver routes too. Like, he could do that. And he is literally, there is nobody else on the face of the planet that could coach Travis Hunter the way Deion Sanders could. And Deion Sanders, he's just like on a warpath, you know? And it started with him at Jackson State those handful of years ago, where he was spited, or he felt he was spited by FSU. They didn't want to hire him because he didn't have any coaching experience. How is that going to look on him? So they went another direction. Then he decided, okay, fine, I'm going to go coach at Jackson State and HBCU, and I'm going to have tremendous success. I'm going to recruit the number one overall player in the entire country to come to my HBCU, my school that is not a Power Five school, is not on people's radar. I'm going to get the number one prospect in the country. And guess what happens then? They have tremendous success. Tremendous success. Then he gets his foot in the door. Finally, Colorado, a bottomed out program, a bottomed out football program. No one cares about Colorado football. They aren't winning football games. They aren't getting, you know, five-star recruits to come play for them. Deion Sanders goes in there and controversially, you know, he told guys like, I'm going to bring in my players. You can stick around and you can play for your spot, or you can leave. And a lot of them left. And I'll tell you what, it's probably because they knew they weren't going to be able to stack up against these guys that he brought in with him. All but Trevor Woods, shout out to him. He had an interception, and one of the few guys that stuck around, John Lynch type stuff, white boy, number 43, safety. Pretty cool. But he had a great game, second in tackles, I think, for the entire game, or third in tackles for the entire game. Sensational third. He had 9 total tackles, 7 solo tackles, and an interception in the end zone. Spectacular defense. I mean, it was a high-scoring game. It was 45-42, Colorado won. But they created a few turnovers, and they were able to edge out TCU. And this is a team, like, I know Max Duggan's not there, okay? Yes, there's some turnover on that team, but this is still the 17th ranked team in the country, and a team led by a coach that went to the national title game last year. Home, week one of the college football season, and Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, and his team went in and beat them. A team comprised of mostly, like, the star players in a lot of key positions, mostly from HBCU, Jackson State. Who would have thought? I mean, if you're a Coach Prime believer, you probably thought. Like, I 20.5-point underdogs for that team is, I mean, the pregame speech that Deion Sanders gave was sensational on all fronts. And, you know, he went into the press conference saying, like, do you believe now? There was a couple reporters that he remembers. He's like, I read all your stuff saying how, like, we're lucky if we get X amount of wins. We're not going to be that great. It's going to be a work in progress, yada, yada. Do you believe now? And this is just week one. I understand that. It's just week one. There are certainly going to be a ton of overreactions. You know, Deion saying we missed Travis Hunter on 2 big plays down the field, and if he catches those and takes them to the house, the Heisman's waiting in his crib. Week one, he's saying this, which, of course, slight overreaction, sure, but at the same time, this is a dude who immediately injected himself into the Heisman race. Like, already up there with Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. as, like, a Heisman favorite. You don't just play those kind of snaps with those kind of expectations against this kind of team in TCU win and have a performance like he did, and then suddenly people aren't like immediately talking Heisman stuff, because this is like a game that there's no one in college football that can do this right now outside of Travis Hunter, I would imagine, right? He is a one of one type of talent. And to go out there, they're like, "Are you tired?" He's like, "I can go again." He's like, let's play another game. Let's do it. I'm ready." Freak. Total freak of nature. An interception, which, by the way, this interception was very much like he's in soft coverage, read the route immediately, jumped it, flying body flat out. He like reached out, full extension, jumped this route and caught it and in the red zone. And sent it the other way for Colorado, which then he proceeded to carve up the TCU secondary with over 110 yards and double-digit catches. Who does that? Literally, who does that? Like, the stats he was putting up are insane. And then Shedeur Sanders, just what a performance for him. Like, you can tell with these kids and with Deion, like, he is able to bring out the best of players. His pregame speech was phenomenal. His ability to mold young men into like these leaders and have instill like the confidence and the skills to be successful in football, and I would imagine also life. Like, he is really, really, really a fantastic coach, and they can win 4 games the rest of the year, and I think it would still be a successful year for them. That's where I'm at. And you can laugh at that all you want, but my goodness, is Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, and those kids at Colorado, like, they are going to be must-watch television for the rest of the year. And everyone immediately, because USC put up 40-plus points in their win last week against San Jose State, or they put up actually 50-plus, but they put up 56 points against San Jose State in week 0. And then on Saturday, they put up 66 points against Nevada. So everyone now immediately, September 30th, Saturday, September 30th, circling their calendars, Colorado versus USC, Pac-12 game. I would imagine that's going to be high scoring. You know, Colorado, they got Travis Hunter and they got a couple other good players on defense. But that game versus TCU was really like a matter of if one person gets a timely stop, they're going to win the game. And that's what happened. You know, Colorado was able to force 2 turnovers and they ended up winning the shootout 45-42. USC is just bombarding people. They have over 100 points scored in 2 weeks, in 2 games of college football this season. So you got to imagine this game, and USC still, this was dating back to last year, this was a problem, but even this year, I would imagine any type of prolific high-powered offense, even like Colorado or anyone else, they're going to be able to put points on the board for USC. It's just a matter of if you can stop them once or twice to give you that edge in this shootout, because USC's defense is still not very good. And, you know, you got to take it for a grain of salt. They're putting up a lot of points, sure, but they're playing San Jose State and Nevada the first 2 games of the season. Their first real test, USC, who are they playing? Stanford, Arizona State, and then Colorado, Arizona, Notre Dame, Utah's a tough back-to-back stretch. That's in the middle of October, but that's like you gotta watch them. If I were to guess, that game versus USC and Colorado would be very much like, you know, the TCU Colorado game, where if they can make a couple turnovers, if they can get to Caleb Williams, they're going to be able to, I think they're going to be able to put points on the board. That's going to be an electric game. Bet the over. The over is going to be like 75 and a half points, but just bet it anyway. Who cares? It's going to be an outrageously high over under. But that's, you know, a couple weeks away, and we'll definitely talk about that when we get up to it. But just, they were the Buffs were the talk of the town. Talk of the town. Deion Sanders is, he knows how to lead men. He does. And he, you know, a lot of players, a lot of great, like all-time great players do not succeed as coaches, head coaches or otherwise, because I would imagine there's this almost like this block of, well, I can do it. Why can't you? You know, one of the reasons why, like, Michael Jordan was never a coach, and Kobe was of that mindset too, but he was a film freak. You know, he did the details thing for ESPN Plus. And the way he broke down film was like otherworldly. And some guys are better than that than others, but Deion Sanders, his ability to not only mold like guys like Travis Hunter, who of course is a defensive back, and he would obviously have a much easier time helping coach him, but to lead men, inspire, direct, make decisions, recruiting, obviously a huge, 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 huge part of college football. He's able to do that clearly, you know, with ease, relative ease. And he even laughed, he even joked on Undisputed after he said, why would I be the one to take that away from Travis Hunter, the two-way ball player mentality? And he said, shoot, I might just be recruiting a couple new guys right now saying stuff like that. And Michael Irvin like busted out laughing, but he's right. You know, guys who thrive in that capacity, because a lot of coaches and a lot of programs, they won't allow it because it's just heightened risk for injury. And you want guys to kind of focus on one side of the ball. But if someone like Travis Hunter, a freak athlete like Travis Hunter, someone who's able to understand and execute both sides of the ball the way he does, if he's really like that, if he's really built like that, why would you not let him go? Why would you just not let him cook? Honestly, let him cook, because he's a sensational athlete, clearly, and he just has a nose for the ball. He knows how to play receivers, and he knows how to manipulate cornerbacks. And I would like to think it's because he's so elite at both that he understands how to negate other players, other good players on each side of the ball as well. It all comes back. And unless it's like, if he's healthy, let him go. Unless he says otherwise, I imagine Deion Sanders is just going to trot him out there whenever he wants. It's insane. Like the kid's a freak, clearly. And I think this, you know, with one week in, he has immediately catapulted himself to Heisman territory. And, you know, Shedeur Sanders, don't sleep on him either. Like, he's going to be a guy that everyone's watching this year. Everyone. And what I really respect about him and Deion, like, yes, that's his son, right? Which a lot of people were like, oh, he's bringing his son in to be the quarterback of Colorado, like nepotism, yada, yada, yada. But like the way Deion talks about his son, he does not talk about him like he is his son. He talks about him like he is his quarterback. And I'm sure they have like a great relationship, and there are moments of like, I'm proud of you in terms of like father son stuff. But the way he speaks about him publicly to the media and otherwise is very much like, he's not my son. He is my quarterback. Like that's my guy. That's my quarterback. Like any other head coach would talk about their quarterback when they have the utmost confidence and respect for them. How at any level, he talks in the same cadence and matter, like the way he describes him and his play style. I mean, like, he will critique him in front of people. He will you know, praise him in front of people, but it's never in the manner of like, that's my boy. It's more of like, that's my quarterback. And you got to respect that because clearly it's not like a favoritism, nepotism thing. Because he said, if anyone wants to stay, if anyone wants to stay, if anyone wants to transfer to come and compete for the quarterback, the starting quarterback job of the University of Colorado, you can do it. The door's open. You can come and if you think you're better than Shedeur Sanders, come in, compete, and win the job, and it will be yours. And no one was able to do it. He's the starting quarterback because he's the best option that they have. And he's a very good football player. Very good football player. So, I mean, this team just obviously the two guys on this team that Deion Sanders, first of all, everyone loves Deion, or most people love Deion. And he's going to be, you know, Coach Prime is going to be at the center of a lot of conversations in college football this year. But in terms of just sheer talent and the players that they have, the guys that they have, like Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders are going to be at the front of the discussion. Like every week with each passing win that Colorado has, it's the hype and the front page, the front headline news is going to grow and grow and grow. I would like to see if they're ranked next week. I don't know. They were unranked going into the season. I don't know if they were close to being ranked. I would imagine not. Like, I don't know exactly where they fell in the preseason rankings, but you gotta think they're gonna be ranked like low 20s at least, right? After, especially the way they played, like against number 17 TCU, to beat them the way they did, fire with fire, and to have some of the individual performances that they did, clearly the team is talented. So you got to think they're going to be ranked at least in the low 20s. I would say as high as 21, as low as 24, 25, of course. But they're going to be there. And the more wins they get, it's just going to keep going up. And God, for the firestorm that would happen if they somehow beat USC in a couple weeks. But we're not even going to talk about that right now because it's so far in the future. It was a fun college football weekend. The only, I would say, alarming, not alarming, but the only like upset that you could say is Florida State, number 8 Florida State, beating 5th ranked LSU 45-24. That's a big difference, point differential for, you know, an 8-5 seed. And for LSU, obviously, you're probably not thrilled with how that game went. But honestly, the most shocking loss was probably North Texas slamming Baylor. And by biggest upset, I mean, obviously, outside of Colorado, because Colorado being TCU is clearly the biggest upset of week one. But this is like an unranked game, Texas State versus Baylor. Texas State beat Baylor 42-31. Texas State's first win over a Power 5 school. Also, Colorado was like their first win versus an AP top 25 team in, I think, like a decade. It was crazy. It's like been a really long time. That program's been trash for a while. So, can't praise Deion enough, obviously. But yeah, so other than that one, and then Texas State just beating Baylor, surprisingly, that was everyone else kind of just rolled along like usual. All the other top 25 teams rolled along like usual. Florida State beating LSU as bad as they did was pretty shocking too. Now, moving on to a team that gave me some life this weekend. A team that finally, for probably the first time all season, is fun to watch, the New York Yankees. And I've been barking it up this tree for weeks, saying, bring up the kids, let them play. We got nothing to lose. Let's see what they're made of. Everyone, Wells, Dominguez, let Pereira, Cabrera, Peraza, let them all play. Every day, let them play. And that's exactly what happened this weekend. And the Yankees swept the Houston Astros, the hated Houston Astros for Yankees fans, 3 games in a row for the first time, they swept them in a 3-game series, I should say, for the first time since 2013. 10 years. 10 years. Just incredible. Of course, it coincides with bringing up the kids. It's not a coincidence. Jason Dominguez homers twice this weekend, including a home run in his first at bat against Justin Verlander, no less. All the kids hit. Gleyber is the oldest of the bunch. Obviously, he's a veteran, so I'm not going to include him in this. But he's gonna. I was saying towards the trade deadline, maybe trade him. Like if the Yankees were going to be sellers, Gleyber definitely had. He was the most movable, and he had the highest potential for a haul. And we kept him. I'm glad we kept him. We kept him, so we got to resign him. Can't let him go. Resign Gleyber Torres, and then you got. For the rest of the year, I don't know what's up with Rizzo. I know he's making progress. I would be surprised if he came in for the remaining of the year. Maybe towards the end, you get him in for the last couple weeks of the season. If he's feeling 100%, that's fine. But I'm not really stressing about Anthony Rizzo. I want him to get right. I want him to get healthy. And we don't need any other mishaps or unfortunate things to happen to him that would throw him off heading into next year. Cause like he was playing great ball before this concussion thing and then the post-concussion thing. And it was like this huge mystery, yada, yada, yada. So I just want him to get right. I don't think there's any need to rush him back, but in terms of the Yankees overall, like Judge is still like arguably the best hitter in baseball. Like he's phenomenal. Even missing all the time he did, he still has like 35 home runs. He's been sensational and he still is like the cornerstone of this team. Gleyber has been good all year, outside of Judge when he was healthy. Gleyber's been the best hitter on this team. DJ LeMahieu has around a 900 OPS in the month of August and hitting just a hair under 300 for the month as well. He has been, I don't know what he did, if he tweaked his approach, his load, if he streamlined. I did notice the other day he doesn't wiggle his bat as much during the at-bat. It's much more straight and much more firm, and it's a lot more just compact, like holding it there. Pitcher lifts his leg, he gives it like a little wiggle on his load, and then he, follows through and connects with, he's been connecting with the ball and he's been struggling, right? He has been struggling for dating back to last year. He just has not been the same guy that he was when he won that batting title. He just hasn't been the same hitter. The average hasn't been there and he's been struggling to even just get on base. So I don't know what exactly the difference is he made offensively, but he has been very, very, very good in the month of August. And then everyone else, like you have kids, like Gerrit Cole didn't even pitch this weekend. The Yankees won 3 games. It was so such a relief to watch. But everyone else, I mean, Everson Pereira had a couple extra base hits and RBIs. Oswald Peraza had, I think, like 3 doubles this weekend. Dominguez homer twice, as I said. Austin Wells had a few RBIs. He ripped a double. The guys just looked good. The team looked good. They looked fun. They looked fresh, excited. They were excited. There was like this palpable joy coming from this team. And, a lot of it, especially the third game of the 3-game set, the offense came late in the game. It was 1-0, I think, up until like the 6th inning. And then the Yankees got a couple runs. And then from, I think, in the 8th and the 9th, they scored like 3 or 4 runs. So they had a lot of late inning stuff going on. Not flat, on their toes, ready to play. Each player stepping up to the plate, excited, ready, like just on their top stuff. It was... Oh my God, man. It was such a relief to watch. It really, really, really was. And that's what makes me excited about the future. Because looking ahead, these guys, you know, you're going to have the rest of the season, of course, all of September to kind of feel it out even more so and see how who progresses in what ways. You know, I saw Everson Pereira, his like ball, the way he, his launch angles and his hard hit balls and everything, he is hard outs. And this weekend, he finally started hitting them when they are, where the player, other defensive players aren't, as they say, hit them where they ain't is the old adage. So he finally started to see some holes. Peraza, who has been struggling mightily and who I have said, Peraza is a unique case because I think Peraza could be really good. I think he could be really good. He's already an exceptional defender, versatile, can play second, third, and short like a lot of these other young guys can. And I just, he was struggling, I think, for the most part because Boone did a lot of, I'm going to play you 1-2 days in a row, and then you're going to sit for a couple days, and then I'm going to play you again, and then you're going to sit for a couple days because the Yankees had some people to go around, and now you're kind of opening it up a little bit more, and you're saying, all right, let's get the kids some playing time. And that is the most important thing you can do for young players. Like, all these guys are 24 or younger. Wells and Austin Wells and Oswaldo Cabrera are 24. Peraza is 23. Volpe and Pereira are 22. And Jason Dominguez is just 20 years old. So obviously next year they'll all be aged up 1 year, but still like an unbelievably young core of players and at key positions. You know, the left field position for the Yankees has been a rotating door of players and or a stable of mediocrity for since basically Brett Gardner retired. And obviously Brett Gardner, good defensive left fielder towards the end of his career, but offensively his mentality was really just gripping and ripping. And that was the Yankees. That is the Yankees mentality. Hopefully now it starts to change. And even going into the next year, it's completely different, which Hal Steinbrenner did come out and say, you know, we're going to take a deep dive. We're going to bring third party people in to take a deep dive of how we do everything, analytics, development, all that kind of stuff. We're going to take a deep dive into how we operate as a franchise, which, you know, I don't know if that necessarily means he's going to be firing a lot of people because it is on record that he doesn't like firing people, but that helped, that made me feel good a little bit, at least knowing that he's going to bring third party people in and say, hey, this isn't working and this isn't working. You need to change this, whatever. I would very much just be okay. I know Brian Cashman, he's a headache, and a lot of fans, including myself, I've really turned on him. He signed it at the end of the day, he signed an extension last year. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I think if there was literally just one thing to happen for this franchise, it's scrap the analytics department. You need a new mentality with these kids. Get on base, put the ball in play. Like, literally go back to old school baseball tactics, make contact, put the ball in play, and good things happen. So back to this weekend series, a lot of the lineups we saw, you know, including even Sunday, which I would think, I think Stanton was the one who didn't play. Stanton didn't play in one of these games, but you're really looking at, I'm going to say, going across the diamond. This is what I really think. For the rest of the season, more or less, this is what you're rolling with. Everson Pereira in left, Dominguez in center, Judge in right, Peraza at third, Volpe at short, Torres at second, LeMahieu at first, depending on what's going on with Rizzo, but again, assuming Rizzo doesn't play the rest of the year. LeMahieu at first, Wells behind the plate. And then you have Stanton most likely being the DH, the everyday DH, with, and then Oswaldo Cabrera, DJ LeMahieu kind of platooning there at the utility positions. So, for example, like, you can DH Judge and put, like, if Stanton sits, DH Judge, Pereira go, or Pereira stays in left, Oswaldo Cabrera goes in right, because Oswaldo Cabrera is even a bigger utility defensively than DJ LeMahieu. Cabrera could play short, third, and both corner outfield spots. So he needs to play a lot, because he has been struggling. He was on the roster to begin the year. I liked what he did at the end of last year. I had a lot of hopes for him. He's been struggling. He got sent down for a period of time. Now he's up with the team, I would say, permanently now. So he's got to really take it by the reins and get it going as much as the rest of these guys. And getting him in there is going to be important, but his utility is definitely like a nice adage to him. LeMahieu, like I said, is basically going to be anchored to first base until Rizzo comes back and or the rest of the season. So LeMahieu's there. We saw a lineup on, I think, Sunday where Torres didn't play. Peraza was at second. Cabrera was at third. That's a lineup. That's a defensive alignment you're going to see, I think, more than once, a few times going out throughout the course of the rest of the year. The best lineup for me, in my head, this is where we're going here, is going into next year, I would like the starting defensive alignment, or let's just say the starting defensive alignment, and then we'll go through the actual lineup for the Yankees opening day of next year. And I may be getting ahead of myself, but I really don't care, because I think this is so important. I see a lot of people on Twitter talking about like Cody Bellinger being the left fielder. Please do not go out and sign Cody Bellinger. I mean, he's been fantastic. I know everyone kind of falls in love and says, oh, he would be great in Yankee Stadium with that short Porsche or whatever. I don't know. I really don't know if that is the right move to make given the young talent that you have. Unless you're like, okay, we're going to go out and sign Cody Bellinger, you better be ready to turn around and trade a couple of these young guys for other players if you really want to do that. You cannot keep these young dudes on your roster or in your minor league system if you decide to go out and sign Cody Bellinger. So barring no major free agent signings, other than ideally a starting pitcher would be really great, and maybe some depth pieces for the bench and stuff, would love that. You're looking at something like, we'll go 11 guys deep here. Pereira in left, Dominguez in center, Judge in right, Peraza at third, Volpe at short, Torres at second, Rizzo at first, Wells behind the plate, and then Stanton's going to be your everyday DH, and you're going to have Oswaldo Cabrera and DJ LeMahieu being those utility guys where you can plug them in, because Cabrera is a switch hitter, and LeMahieu obviously is a guy that you want at the top of your lineup. He makes contact, or at least when he's on, he's making contact. He played great this weekend. Like I said, he's been playing great all August. But when he's his best self, he's a guy you want at the top of the lineup. So depending on, matchups and whatnot, you're probably going to get some guys platooning in there. I think ideally Stanton eats the short end of that stick. And probably Rizzo, I mean, you throw DJ in there at first and you have no problem. So Rizzo, depending on what's going on with him, but the non-negotiables, in my opinion, obviously are Wells and Dominguez. Like, those are two guys at center field and catcher who, first of all, invaluable positions in the game of baseball. And when you get not only good defense, but high offensive productivity from those positions, you are primed to be a competitive team. That's just the way it is. Those are that and shortstop. Center field, shortstop, catcher. If you're locked in at those three positions, you're sitting good. You really are. So, I mean, look at like the Orioles, right? Who is that? Who are three of those guys that this young team is built around? Gunnar Henderson at short, Adley Rutschman at catcher, and then Cedric Mullins in center field. Obviously, Anthony Santander is like incredible, but Cedric Mullins was one of those guys, like 30-30 guys, right? Who was spectacular. And then Henderson and Rutschman are unbelievable. And by the way, which I also said, Jack, speaking of the Orioles, last bit on them before I get back to the Yankees, Jackson Holliday promoted to AAA. We're going to see him in September and he's going to be good. And he's going to be the starting shortstop for the Orioles next year. So you got to look at guys look at the Astros and how they've built up their team through their farm system. The Orioles are like the best example you have in all of baseball in terms of drafting well, developing well, and then giving the keys to the kingdom to your young players. It's just that's what you got to do. So I am hopeful for the future of this Yankees team because it feels like it took basically bottoming out for them to finally like realize, hey, our approach is not working. So let's try and change it up. And to change it up like this, we're going to your young guys. Like this is the youngest the Yankees have been since the mid-90s. Damn near 30 years since the Yankees have been like this, because for forever it's been buy, trade. And now you're finally really getting these guys where the Yankees really have a potential to be a mostly farm system, homegrown talent organization. And, you know, there are red flags with this approach. Obviously, if some of these guys don't pan out, you're definitely in trouble, but there's always going to be free agents available that you can go and get. But Peraza, Volpe, Torres, Wells, Dominguez, and Pereira, I think can be guys that they're going to be there for years. Like they can be, if they pan out, you let them play, you let them get in their groove. I think a lot of these guys are going to be good ball players, man. Specifically Wells and Dominguez, I think are the highest on that list for me. And Volpe, of course, but he's been the starting shortstop and, you know, first 2020 Yankees player ever, which 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases. He's only going up. He's already a top 15 shortstop in all of baseball. So he's already up above the league average for shortstops, which is all you can ask for from a 22-year-old rookie. So I am very much excited to see his development, of course. And I think once we kind of throw out that swing and hit the ball hard mentality, that average is going to go up. That's like the one thing where you're like, you know, he's hitting below 220, I think, right now, or around 220. So you want that to go up, obviously. And with a lot of these guys, that's a thing that I think that's going to change. And I think that's going to turn a lot this franchise around is just getting back to the pure fundamentals of baseball. Put the bat on the ball. It's literally as simple as that sometimes, I think. Now, like I said, there are some red flags with this approach, mostly being that Garrett Cole and Aaron Judge are entering their early 30s. And Garrett Cole is going to win his first Cy Young Award this year, I would think, unless he gets absolutely snubbed by these voters. I think it's pretty safe to say he's going to win the AL Cy Young Award this year, and the Yankees aren't even going to make the playoffs. So that's like disheartening, obviously, wasting a prime year of one of the best pitchers in baseball. And you know, he just gets older, which he's been so reliable and so amazing since he's come to the Bronx. Everything as advertised, worth every damn dollar that the Yankees pay him, as has Aaron Judge. I mean, Aaron Judge, of course, unfortunately got hurt a little bit this year. I think he missed around 40 games, assuming he, you know, knock on wood here, that he stays healthy for the rest of the season. He'll probably play around, I think, 120, 130 games? Not like 115, 120 games. So things really went off the rails when he went down with that injury. Who knows where they are if he's healthy. He just provides so much to that lineup. And Rizzo, same thing. It's been a weird year, obviously. Injuries throughout the rotation. You got to think, ideally, Cortez comes back next year and is healthy. Carlos Rodon lives up to his contract, would be just a sensational 1-2 punch with Gerrit Cole, but he's probably not going to pitch for the rest of the year. And I, like I said, Judge and Cole, they're entering their early 30s. So with this approach of these young guys, is that the smartest move? Like, if you're competitive, then you're competitive and it works out. Like, now you, not only do you have young guys, but you have veterans surrounding them that are going to lead the way and they're going to help you, like the Braves, you know, the Braves, bunch of young guys, some free agents, they lock them all up for the early future. That's like been their model. The Orioles, of course, like they have a couple of veterans on that team who've been around, who've been on that team for 2, 3, 4 years. And now these younger guys are coming up and they're competitive. Like, they're going to win the AL East. They're going to be in the playoffs and they're going to be fun to watch. Those are best case scenario for the Yankees. There is a scenario where these guys just don't pan out over the course of a long season. And now you're kind of stuck with time to trade them and time to sign free agents. Ideally, it doesn't get to that point, but I've been barking up this tree for months and months and months. Good teams are built through your farm system and then enhanced through trades and free agency. You cannot buy a championship. Doesn't work. The Yankees, for all their whole evil empire, George Steinbrenner buying and trading everything under the sun, basically won championship, 2009. That's about it. Because before that, in the 90s, the dynasty that they had, that's a majority of farm system players coming together and succeeding and then being enhanced through the trade market and the free agency market. That's really what it is. That's how it's been. And, you know, you can look at a lot of teams who have won World Series. A lot of them are like teams that they're together for years. And then you make a trade, you sign a guy, things come together, and now you're a World Series champion. That is my full belief on how to win championships. Look at the Mets. I mean, Steve Cohen, like, he just tried to basically one for one adopt the George Steinbrenner mentality. I'm going to buy everything under the sun. Like, first he starts off with trading for Francisco Lindor, signing him to a huge deal. And then everything else after that, you know, trading for Bassett and Canna and signing Starling Marte and getting Scherzer and, you know, Verlander this year and trying to be this like big dog where I'm going to sign these guys and we're going to win. For all that's worth, they have a sensational year last year, crumble at the end, early playoff exit, wild card. It just doesn't work like that. Look at the Padres. The Padres might not even make the playoffs this year. And they were, I would say they were probably equally, if not higher, exceptions than the New York expectations than the New York Yankees, because they went in and they went out. They got Xander Bogaerts. They still have Juan Soto, Manny Machado. Like, Fernando Tatis Jr. came back and he was someone everyone was like, yup, this is going to be a game changer for them. And they are currently 6 games out of the third wild card spot. 6. The Phillies, the Cubs, who, again, the Cubs, not like, that's guys that they relied on through their, like, Patrick Wisdom and those guys, they relied on through their farm system to build up. They got Cody Bellinger on a 1-year steal, and he's been sensational. They got a good contract, all things considered, with Dansby. If you look around the other free agent shortstop contracts, Dansby Swanson has been worth it for the Chicago Cubs. And good pitching staff, Justin Steele being a beast this year. Like, that is how you do it. The Diamondbacks have the third wild card spot right now. Ton of homegrown talent. Corbin Carroll, like, easily NL Rookie of the Year. Well, maybe not. Ellie De La Cruz, you know? So, and that, look at the other guys. Miami, half a game out. A lot of homegrown talent. Cincinnati, half a game out. A lot of homegrown talent. San Francisco, one game out. How good has the have the San Francisco Giants been for the past 20 years? Well, 10 years, really. The past 10 years, they've been, or 15 years. We'll meet in the middle. 15 years. They've been competitive. Even when people think their like roster is not very impressive, they come in every year and they compete in the NL West with the Dodgers, who also for the past 15 years have been sensational. And like the Dodgers are up there, like the Dodgers are big money spenders, but so they're up there with, you know, this, the big spenders, and they're going to win their division. But Baltimore and the Rays, homegrown talent, Rays and Baltimore, both like think bottom five payroll in baseball. Seattle, they went out, they got a couple of key free agents, but who's leading the way for them? Julio Rodriguez, stud. So you see where I'm getting at. There are only a few teams who are predominantly teams that are put together with big money free agents. The Dodgers being one of them, and they're succeeding. The Phillies, big time money. I mean, they have some guys that they have from their farm system, but mostly big money guys that they signed. They're succeeding, but they're not even half as good as the Braves, and the Braves are mostly homegrown guys. So those are I think that's just, that's the way, man. And, you know, are all of these guys going to pan out for the Yankees? No, I don't. If they did, we're blessed. If they do, we are blessed. But I don't think that's going to be the case. You know, Dominguez and Wells, I think are the Dominguez, Wells and Volpe are the three guys where those are the three key positions you need in baseball to really have like a very, very, very strong foundation, unless you have like otherworldly guys at other positions. So, you know, Judge being the right fielder helps a ton, right? So those three positions panning out, those three players panning out are the biggest on the Yankees checklist. If Pereira pans out at left field, thank God, right? If the Yankees don't feel comfortable with him and what they see for the rest of the year, or what they see in spring training, whatever, if they want to sign Cody Bellinger because they're just more comfortable with that, so be it. But I would like to see Pereira get a chance. Peraza, same thing. Like, he could be your everyday third baseman. I really believe that. But if for whatever reason the Yankees are not comfortable with that and they want to go out and get someone else, just please make it someone who's not 35 years old like Josh Donaldson. Please, please, please. I'm begging you. But I am excited, man. As you can tell, like, I am very excited, honestly, to watch the rest of the season, even though I know there's no future beyond September and the Yankees aren't going to make the playoffs and compete for, you know, one of the few times in my life again. I'm happy. I'm happy that these kids got brought up. I'm happy that they had a great weekend. I'm happy that we swept the Astros, even though, again, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really mean anything. It is, they are good signs. They are good vibes. Watch the Yankees. See what you think of the kids. That's all I'll say. All right, to wrap up the show, of course, as promised, Thursday night football. We are back, baby. We are back. And what an interesting game we have on this Thursday. The Kansas City Chiefs and the Detroit Lions, who, I mean, when was the last time the Lions were like primetime week one football? And they are a team that is like super, super hot. People are super high on them this year. They gained a lot of momentum towards the end of last year. Jared Goff played great. And the team was just really exciting to watch. They had a really high-powered offense and then some good defensive players. And they got some good guys this year in free agency. And they're a team that a lot of people have to win the NFC North. Now, honestly, I'm probably still leaning more towards the Vikings for the NFC North title, but I do think the Lions are going to be good. And given how the NFC is shaped out, you really only have Like, they're going to be worrying about the Vikings, I think, all year, honestly. And who knows what's going on with the Bears and Justin Field and what kind of leap he makes this year with guys like DJ Moore now brought in there. But you have the Cowboys, the Eagles, the Niners. And then outside of that, that's two division winners. And that's at least two division winners in a wild card spot. So you have two more wild card spots and then the other divisional winners to go around. But like the Lions could very easily make the playoffs. That I'm not debating. I think that is something that they're definitely aiming for and that they're definitely equipped to do. I just don't know how much of this hype I'm getting fully behind so far. But Chiefs or Lions at Chiefs. The Lions are 6.5 point underdogs. The money line is plus 235, and the total over under is 54.5. I would be bold enough to say take the over. I am a gambling man, so I would say if I'm a gambling man, which I am, I'm going to say in terms of that, I'm not taking the Lions to win outright because I'm not betting against Patrick Mahomes week one. Sorry, just not doing it. But the total over at 54.5 is enticing for sure. I could see this being a 31-23 type game, which is exactly 54, obviously. But around there, like, I'm sure that's what Vegas is thinking as well. But I like that over to hit. I think the Lions have a potent offense and, you know, it's week one. So I just think either this over is going to smash or it's going to be like a 17-13 game. Really gross, really sloppy. Not what people are expecting at all, obviously, which people are expecting two good offenses to throw the football and be effective. So I'm excited for this game. I'm excited for any football, obviously. You know, with the Lions, unfortunately, they don't have Jameson Williams to start the year. He suspended 6 games because he's a dummy and he bet on, I would imagine, either baseball or basketball for whatever when he was at the Lions facility, which it is illegal to gamble on any sports while on NFL property or team facilities, whatever. So suspended for 6 games. Jahmyr Gibbs, hype around him and what he can bring to this Lions offense. And then when you go to the Chiefs, they're the Super Bowl champions. You know, they're the reigning Super Bowl champions. Patrick Mahomes is going to do what Patrick Mahomes does. He's going to toss for a bunch of yards. And I think in general, if we're looking at the passing props, Jared Goff at 256.5, I think is low. I like that bet a lot. Mahomes at 305.5. The one you should smash right now are two. Jahmyr Gibbs receiving, we're going to receiving props. Jahmyr Gibbs, 31.5 receiving props, and Travis Kelce, 79.5 yards. I mean, those two right there, I'm looking at that. And even Amon-Ra St. Brown at 77.5, who, you know, by the way, Amon-Ra St. Brown, spectacular year last year, great wide receiver. And you think when he comes back, then you have Jameson Williams and him, plus Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. I almost said Devin Singletary, David Montgomery, who they added to that backfield basically to replace Jamal Williams. And then Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be that slightly better receiving DeAndre Swift role. So you have that, like, you know, thunder and lightning kind of combo here. But I love that. Jahmyr Gibbs, 31.5 receiving yards. They have said, we're going to, you know, make him run routes out of the backfield. He's going to play some slot. He's going to be everywhere in this offense. He's going to be in there when Montgomery is lined up as the halfback for the Detroit Lions. So Kelce, Amon-Ra, and Jahmyr Gibbs, 79.5 for Kelce, 77.5 for Amon-Ra, and 31.5 for Jahmyr Gibbs. If I had to pick two out of the three, I'm ditching Amon-Ra's 77.5 receiving yards. I like Travis Kelce at 79.5, and I like Jahmyr Gibbs at 31.5. Rushing props, David Montgomery, I don't hate at 49.5. And I don't also hate to score a touchdown, David Montgomery. He's at plus 100. He's the lowest odds outside of Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is minus 175 to score a touchdown. David Montgomery is plus 100, and there's very good reason for that. He's going to be the red zone guy. He's going to be the guy that's inside the five. They give him the ball, put his shoulder down, truck someone, get it into the end zone. That is going to be his role. Like I said, very much replacing Jamal Williams, who led the league in touchdowns last year. He's going to be that guy. But those are just some of the props. So to recap, I like Kelsey's over receiving, Jahmyr Gibbs over receiving, David Montgomery to score a touchdown, and the over at 54.5, I would say are probably, and Jared Goff over passing are the five that, I mean, five's a lot. I'm not telling you to bet all five. In fact, I would probably say definitely don't bet all five. But take some of those are my recommendations. Take one or two, maybe even three of those. If you want, you can parlay them, bet a couple, you know, straight bets if need be. That's probably what I'm going to do. I'll just do a straight bet on the over and then do a parlay with three of those player props. Probably Kelsey and Jahmyr Gibbs receiving. So not gambling advice, but just my output on or my input on all of that. I'm so happy football's back. Of course, next week we're going to have a whole recap on week one, and that's going to be a large chunk of the episode. We're getting back into that grind. So baseball will be taking a back seat, but of course, towards the end of the season leading up to the playoffs, that's going to emerge even more. It's going to be basically half football, half baseball episodes. Very excited. That's what I'm looking for. If you're asking me straight out to pick who's going to win Thursday night, like, why would I ever bet against the Chiefs? I'm going to go with them. But we're talking, that was talking little gamble talk. So there you go. Thank you all for listening. That'll wrap it up for this episode of From My Point of View. Thursday night football. I'm smiling ear to ear, baby. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate you as always. Have a great rest of your week. I hope everyone had a great Labor Day weekend. And I'll talk to you all next Tuesday.